ask really loud.
Historically, green building has been a bit touchy-feely. About 3 years ago, though, a study came out from by an engineering or an energy consulting firm called Capital E, based in DC, that was really a landmark study for the green building movement. And they evaluated about 40 LEED certified. LEED is, if you're not familiar, it's LEED, and it's the standard for rating the greenness of buildings, at least in the commercial sector. They evaluated about 40 of these LEED buildings and found that on average, for a 2% green premium, the payback was 20%. That you would see 10 times your investment simply over a 20-year period. They just assumed that the lifespan of the building was 20 years. And since that time, in the past 3 years, a number of other studies have come out that have strongly made the case for green building. And another one that I would recommend is McGraw-Hill, which came out with a study just last year for both the residential and the commercial sectors. You can find that. Just type in McGraw-Hill green building and you'll find that study. But there's no question that you can make the business case for green building. What is important to recognize, though, is that the term green building is an incredibly vague term when it comes down to it. There are so many technologies, there are so many techniques, there are so many products available. There are so many ways in which you can build green. And it really comes down to personal values as well. So while the business case is certainly very important, and I don't want to minimize that at all, I also want to emphasize that there are a lot of values that play into green building. And it's interesting because the green building movement is oftentimes held up to this financial standard, whereas there are many things about our buildings and about how we interact with our buildings that are very emotional and very qualitative. So I think a good example is, what is the payback period of a granite countertop? You know, it has no payback period. It's just somebody wants it, and it's a value to them. So when you start talking about low VOC paint or that promotes better indoor air quality, or when you start talking about maybe a type of flooring that's more locally produced, that hits an emotional chord with some people. That's important to them, and they're willing to pay more for it. So as we talk about the business case for green building, I think it's very important to differentiate between what's really quantitative and what's more qualitative.
Good point. I was going to say, two things from experience that I've had. One is from NCIPL. It really is, and this is what Brad had mentioned, it is, we take it as more of a moral issue, because the financials can be, you can run a spreadsheet any way you want, really. My net present value is bigger than your net present value. What determines a particular project to go ahead with? There are a lot of variables that are encompassed in that. But I think one of the things that we try to work with people is that to think about the moral issue of this, is that where is it coming from? If we're living in deficit, if we're taking more water than we're returning to the aquifers, if we are destroying the forests, they're not being replenished, who is going to pay for that? It's, where is the aspect of stewardship which runs through every faith and every spiritual practice that is out there? No one says trash the earth. It says, you know, we have an idea of, we have commerce, we trade with each other. But if that means the destruction of the fisheries, the destruction of our way of agriculture, the loss of water habitat, and it ultimately comes back to us, then what have we gained? And that, what it really comes down to is, what are we handing our children and our grandchildren? Now, we look at it from a more of a moral value, from a moral perspective, and when you start looking at that, then maybe a 2-year or 1-year payback, well, it's really not so important if you're thinking about generational. If we use the thoughts of the Confederacy of the Iroquois, seven generations. Decisions were made over seven generations. So just imagine that all of a sudden, if like, would we even be having this conversation about payback? Because after 20 years or 10 years or 5 years, you know, you may be gone, but the community still has the building. The community still has whatever structure you have there. So if you're able to do something that is lasting and enduring, which unfortunately is not the trend, but I think it will be chartered and placed on your shoulders, that's the trend it has to, things have to be done and perceived from. And the quick hit, you know, we live in a nanosecond society, and you know, I'm part of that. So I'm not saying I'm above that. I am part of that. But I think we're also part of the solution. And one of the things that comes from this is that I'm 50 years old. There will be fewer days ahead than there are behind. But most of you are going to be looking ahead for your children and grandchildren. What are you leaving them? And I think when people, and this is regardless of whatever religious institution or whatever faith practice you have, people naturally want to do something better for their kids. What parent does not want to do something better for their children? That's a universal precept. So I'll give you two examples of what we've been doing. The church that I go to at Pullen Memorial, which is next door actually, next door neighbor, we're doing a extension to the building. And what we've done is we looked at this from many different perspectives. But what we're going to do is we're going to add an extension to the church. It's a challenging thing, but we're going to do a green building. We're following a Green Globes approach rather than LEED, but we're following the same criteria for indoor air, for sight, for water. So basically the things we're incorporating is a green roof for both carbon sequestration, but also as a place for people to for reflection. We're going to be doing daylighting. We're going to be using geothermal, LED lights, CFLs, high-efficiency lighting, a cistern for water. Because I think that's the other thing that we're forgetting about is power is one thing, but if you have no water, and that's the other thing to go hand in hand, water, and that's going to be probably the biggest thing on the horizon in the next 10 to 20 years, is water. Where's it coming from? We're pumping, we're drawing more than we're putting back. So if we make our buildings act like a tree, in the words of William McDonough, you know, we're part of the solution. We're helping becoming a part of a community that is adding health, we're adding diversity, and we're adding abundance, rather than diminishing, destroying, or creating scarcity. So now, more buildings, hey, you're actually home habitat for kids, habitat for animals, for plants, getting water. So that was the idea for the cistern. We also basically are the equivalent would be a LEED gold. We're almost a LEED gold, LEED silver. So we had to put into practice what we wanted to do, and I think that's one of the things that everybody here is right. The financial arguments can be made. If you don't want to do something, 2 months, that wasn't quick enough, 2 years. But if you think of it from the timeline of a community, you're going to be there, that building's going to be there for a long time. So all of a sudden, 5-10 year payback. I mean, most of the stuff we've done for our home is going to be between 5 to 10 years. But we're not going anywhere. We're going to stay there. But the benefits we get are better health, better comfort, the fact that we're doing our part. And I think that's the question that for your generation is coming up. You're going to be handed some really challenging things coming up. And there's no two ways around it. So by putting these things into practice, you're actually helping make your community and your world a better place. And in the end, it doesn't take as much. Maybe sometimes it will take more money up front. But if you did a payout for 20, 30, 50 years, it's a no-brainer. High-performance building wins every time. The question is when you start writing yourself a check. But the other part is what have you done with your neighbor, for your own family, and your community? So we did that, and that was the impetus for us to do for our own home. So I would definitely say for you all, if anything I can say today is that go back and do something in your own home as a personal initiative, as a personal challenge. Maybe you have a home, you can do something, get an energy audit. Maybe you're renting, see what you can do to reduce things. But from that knowledge, you gain strength. From that strength, you'll do something bigger. So when you're out working in the world and somebody challenges you and says, it doesn't pay, it's like, well, we don't have any water. It doesn't matter how much I got of an NPV. You're up a creek. So
has Pullen done anything to advertise this extension that you're doing broadly in the community so others can see what you're doing and learn from what you're trying to do at Pullen?
Not yet. We have not, because we're still in the process of the capital campaign. It may take us longer to actually do it, but the design, we actually want to design within the architectural community. We have Dixon and Weinstein who did the work. So there was a paper competition and we won, which we're I was surprised. I mean, we're gratified, but that wasn't the reason why we did it. But when it becomes, when we're ready to turn dirt and break ground, then we'll mention that. But there are other communities and other churches and other places that are doing stuff. So we're definitely not leading in the way, but we're trying to do our part.
It seems like as we attempt to kind of make the case for green building and sustainability in general, just kind of listening to what everybody's been talking about, I hear Jonathan talking about, among other things, the financial motivation, and Brad speaks of the emotional motivation, and then Bob is speaking now, among other things, the moral motivation. I'd also like to make the case somewhat on a broad level, the compelling nature of green building as the sexy thing to do as well. It's also, I mean, it's like, it's the moral thing, it's the emotional thing, it's the financial thing, but it's also, I mean, for better and for worse, it's become the sexy thing to do. It's something that I feel like is a double-edged sword, because as more and more people kind of read these publications that Bob Kingery mentioned, you know, every publication you pick up is now talking about something green or something sustainable. And I feel like that's raising the level of consciousness in the public as a whole, which, you know, overall I feel like is a really good thing, but the flip side to that is that it can potentially become sort of a greenwashing campaign. And I feel like that's something that we need to continue to be aware of as we spread the love and spread the word about sustainability and green issues, is to sort of revel in and allow the sort of sexy nature of what's happening on that level, but also to try to go a bit deeper and look at, you know, these ultimately more important issues.
Obviously, there's different value propositions to the industry, and everyone is going to have their own value, what they want to get out of investing in these technologies, be it financial, emotional, moral, or the sexy factor. But with the 25 minutes or so we have left, this is really for you guys and your own personal interests. So at this point, I would just kind of like to turn it over for questions and let our professionals here give their insight. So again, speak up as loud as you can so we can try to get it on the microphone.
I have a question. I'm having a hard time kind of figuring out exactly how to articulate it, so I'll just throw it out there and see if you guys can work with it. I think all of you have made good points, and I understand that. My question is that, you know, we are kind of on the innovation part of the uptake curve here. So really, the demand, although it's growing in publications and we see like that, I think to the common consumer, you know, they would really have to pull this, especially, you know, what are the green options? What are the green insulation options, the power options, the water options? You know, everyone is so involved, especially in the construction industry, it seems, in terms of, you know, what are the mainstream providers, and they go to those guys, and we don't, you know, there's some Energy Star type things going on there, but I don't think people have enough awareness of exactly what's out there and exactly who provides it. Does there need to be a push, either from a regulatory standpoint, where, you know, you have to start, the U.S. government kind of dictates this, are the major companies like the KBs and the Centechs and all those companies going to start kind of pushing it? Where is it, and where does it need to be?
If I can, I think about this every single day, actually, that very question, and being the project manager of the mainstream green home. So the question is, what I oversee a team of researchers who, you know, we ask ourselves, okay, when it comes down to carpet, what are we going to put in the house that would have mainstream appeal but also green appeal? And so we go through this checklist of green criteria, but we also have a homeowner who's very very sensitive about the mainstream look of every aspect that's going into the home. So you know, we're constantly asking ourselves, how can we how can we mainstream this home? And then we're also quite aware of the fact that this project will be heavily scrutinized, not just internally by our project managers and their home builders, but also by the public at large. I think that we'll be opening up the home for people to come through and tour when it's finished in just a few months. I don't like the thought of pushing green building on the public. I think it really is more of a pull model. I think that it's going to be successful largely due to market demand rather than through any kind of certainly government will have a role and certainly providers will have a role. But I think it's going to be largely, and is, in fact, largely market-driven. The McGraw-Hill study that I just referenced, actually, they were the study 1 year ago anticipated that by 2010, 5 to 10% of residential starts would actually be green. I just returned from the NAHB, National Association of Home Builders, Green Building Conference 2 weeks ago, and they said that McGraw-Hill has since revised those figures just because of so much that's happening, taking place in the market right now, and they've revised those numbers to be up to 30 to 40% by 2010. And so there is a lot that's going on. You're right, though. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of education that needs to take place, and I think that's what's going to drive the market. Think about the Whole Foods model and how they've revolutionized the food industry for sustainable purposes. What they've done is they've helped people, I should say the market itself has become more aware of just the role that food plays and food production plays in our individual health. And I think the exact same thing is going to happen with the homes we live in and the offices that we work in. We're becoming more cognizant of the fact that that carpet is toxic, it has toxic potential, that indoor air quality, if the duct system isn't well designed, that it's going to play a role in how well we breathe. And there's so much education yet to take place with the marketplace. That's exactly what Advanced Energy is doing, by the way, is they're providing that kind of education to help people become more informed consumers.
Back to my question, Brad, you mentioned a couple of the studies at McGraw-Hill together. Did they, or I don't know if they even could, consider things such as the health of their employees, perhaps, because of the improved air quality and maybe the light, maybe the mood of people better? They're not going to miss, days because of sickness or mental health, for example.
Yeah, I think there are like 70 studies out there just on the productivity benefits of green building in and of themselves. It's not even a question anymore. And when you factor in most corporations will spend 72 times they spend 72 times more on employee salaries than they do on energy bills. So just a 1% increase in productivity is going to have a tremendous impact on their bottom line.
I'm just going to add to a question, or probably addition. Jonathan probably knows, and Casey, but one of the things that we did with our home was we sealed the crawl space. And the reason why we did that, the code now, as a consumer and learning about this stuff, I had someone who helped me, which was like Southern Energy Management to help us, but also the subcontractor we had was Healthy Building Company out of Siler City, Jeff Tooley, and he'd been part of the study, but anyway, part of this, we're sealing crawl spaces, where I guess now for new homes, crawl spaces should be sealed, but what it was is that our home, we did not have that. We're an older home, but newer homes, as I found out, are more susceptible to mold than old homes. Now, that was one of the things I found out for condensation. Older wood actually is tighter in terms of the rings. It does not provide as easy a media. Newer homes, because the newer pine has grown faster, basically once it gets wet, it stays wet, and if it stays close enough to the ground, you've got this nice growth media. So all of a sudden you have these new homes, supposedly cut state of the edge, and they have got worse mold problems than my home or older homes, because the it was a thing that was found with materials. And so people have these, moving these wonderful homes, and then everybody asthma, and you've got headaches, and this. And it turns out to be that up front, by just doing this, by creating, basically what we're just doing is creating an environment underneath the house that it's about 55 degrees, the temperature of the ground, so it stays around there, 55, 60 degrees. The humidity stays a certain level. We use a dehumidifier, so one, it's actually a pretty nice place to hang out if you're going to hang out a crawl space, but they actually insulate it. But number two, it sounds kind of crazy, but even my wife would go into the crawl space now. So, but number two is it's controlled. It prevents any mold or anything else growing there, so crickets or any other bugs or anything else that are a problem for homeowners. Well, the other thing is that for health, I mean, in terms of the number of colds that we've noticed, our health has improved. And if anybody has kids or anybody has asthma, boom, one time the ER, that's 10K. Or maybe amount even more. If you look at your bill, if you end up having how much you got to pay, and that's from the American Lung Association. A rough idea if you have to stay overnight. So two or three times a year, boom, all of a sudden. And the thing is, you in good faith have gone and got this house. You didn't know that you actually have a mold problem. You would not have thought that. And that was one of the things that Jeff had told me, that their biggest clients, the biggest groups are builders who want to do the right thing. But no, who knew? But this is part of the research, and Advanced Energy was part of that. And let Jonathan talk more about that, but that's really important because the health benefits are huge. And if you're sick, all of a sudden, it doesn't matter. Someone tells you, I can make you well for X amount of dollars, you're going to do it. And in terms of productivity, your home is your refuge, your sanctuary. It's a great place to come home and recharge. It shouldn't be a place that's like, oh no, now what, type of thing. And I think that's, you know, that's one of the great things we have about our home.
The area that I see being sort of open to kind of where I focus in terms of working with folks in green and energy efficiency is trying to just pump the value. If something's not valuable, then why should they do it? And if a homeowner's not educated on the value of granite countertops or the value of a closed crawl space, then they're just not going to know the benefit.
Right, there can't be a pull.
Yeah, and so right, so whether it's a push or a pull, if they don't, people don't see the value in it, then they, it's just not on. They're just not aware of it. And so there are folks that, I mean, the federal government has EPA has the Energy Star program that is trying to create value for Energy Star homes. There are some cities and municipalities who are requiring that all new construction be green or be LEED. I mean, they're city, so like. Couple cities in Texas, I think a city in New Jersey is also requiring energy efficient building. Chicago is trying to be the greenest city. So there, what we consider sort of procedural incentives that cities and municipalities are trying to push through, so that if a building is energy efficient or green or LEED or these other program related, that there's a procedural, there's a quicker process for that to be built. And so I think that's in some ways, people are finding the value and trying to demonstrate the value in building certain ways. And mentioned with the closed crawl spaces, we're about to start a phase two of looking at the connection between homeowner health, building high performance homes, and reducing the risk of asthma in homeowners. And so it's a Department of HUD funded study, and we've already performed one phase of it, and we're analyzing the data, but we're trying to have a research-based finding results showing that a high-performance home, possibly a green home, is going to be more healthy to live in or reduce the risk of asthma. So we're trying to, again, boost the value of a high-performance home or possibly a green home.
I have kind of another question following along with you.